You're listening to the Table of Malcontents, where Aaron Armstrong, Dave Schrader, and Barnabas Piper talk about the books they love and a few they really don't to help you be a better reader. Hey everybody, welcome to today's episode of Table of Malcontents. I'm Aaron, and with me are Dave and Barnabas. Guys?
Still not sleeping.
Why not, Dave?
That's the theme. That's the theme right now. It's been a month and a half.
Are you taking your melatonin?
Of the content dog that we have at our house right now. We have a
do we need to start bleeping the word?
We have a fur baby.
And yeah. While you're working on your book baby?
While I'm working on the book baby reveal.
Yeah. See, book baby is like, oh, that's kind of irritating and weird. Fur baby is like creepy.
It's absolutely creepy. So creepy. We're going to end that right now.
It sounds a little bit like Furby.
Oh, gosh. Ooh. Man. Wow.
Except like
Furby.
Sort of
Furby is really scary.
Sort of a pseudo bestial Furby. Like we kind of things get weird.
I keep saying bestial and I just cringe.
Do I keep saying that?
You keep saying that bestial.
But it fits with your life verse of Ezekiel 23:20.
Shut up, folks. It's my life verse. No, that's my blessing to anyone who asks me for a verse.
It's my
gift to them.
Yep.
No.
Tell us about the Furby.
All right, Furby. Furby. His name is Bear. He is a. He's gonna be like 100 pounds. He's a Great Pyrenees / lab mix, and he really is.
Did this dog end up at your home on purpose? Like, did you get a 100-pound dog on purpose?
No. He was a bear. He's a little baby dog. You know.
Yeah, but so like you knew the breed though, right?
No, it was some people down the street who have a farm, and they happen to have some pups. And they were just like, hey, these guys need some homes. Who wants one? And there you go.
Just giving them away?
Well, all right, first of all, we lost our dog Winston last year, and he's the best
Winston
dog in the world.
Winston was a legend.
Winston was freaking amazing.
Okay.
And
do I need to bleep
that has a long way to go.
Especially when Winston pooped on you in the car.
He pooped on me in the car. He had his way with the Secretary of Education's dog. On a beach while we were walking on the beach.
I believe he was legendarily flatulent as well.
I mean, there's so many stories about Winston that may be my book, guys. So there you go.
It's just beyond your scandals.
The legend of Winston is I would read it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, the downside, of course, is that we know.
I just thought of a subtitle, but I can't say it.
I know. You know what's going to happen. Yeah.
He's going to die at the end.
Why are you going to do that to me, Dave? I know, which is
why are you going to do that to
the
me?
The hardest thing is, like, you know how it is. Like, there are people that I've known, which just makes me a terrible person, of course, that I haven't cried nearly as much as I cried over him dying. You know, it's like, I know it is. Because, like, he was with us. Like, when Brooke and I were engaged,
you know,
we found
him. You just liked
him.
He
showed up as a puppy on our doorstep, and, like, we were engaged, and we were like, all right.
I make fun of you for a lot of things. Crying over a dog dying is not one of them.
Gosh.
People cry over fictional dogs dying because there's this strange psychotic habit that authors have and publishers seem to love of putting out books in which the heroic canine
gets
off.
Yeah. So wait, hold on real quick. Yeah. So the other day, this is a few weeks ago now.
Yeah.
Madeline, who's my fifth. Yeah, this is what kind of prompted this, even though we talked about it a while ago, but then this happened. So my daughter Madeline, who is 10, she's in fifth grade. She is reading a book. I use most of the time I'm reading the books with her. This one I have not. So if she finally slams her hands down on the kitchen table as she's reading this book, and she just screams out, "They killed the dog! This book is horrible!" Or like, "This book is the worst."
Did she cry or was she just enraged?
She's just mad. Just mad. She's like, she couldn't believe they would kill a dog or two dogs in this instance right here too. I mean, she was like mad about it.
Yeah.
And the book is Where the Red Fern Grows. So, which we have learned in our side conversations that two of us here have read it.
Yes.
And one said Canadian has not.
That's true.
Man.
That's true. We did not read that one. You know, we read a lot of Farley Mowat and things like that.
You just killed a bunch of bears and moose.
Bears and
you
moose.
You killed and pet moose.
And, you know,
pet
wolves meese, were. Meese. Wolves were in there too.
There's a book called The Yearling about raising a deer, and then that one gets killed.
Right. Like, the deer get killed too.
And it's Bambi. Sad, but you're like, you know what? Like, you already tried to make me cry with Bambi, and it didn't work. You're not going to get me with this one either. Well, the dog is sad. So I have two questions. One, why do psychotic authors write these? And I'll ask my second question in a minute. So let's just get through the first one.
Why do they write them? All right.
That's a good question. That's a hard question because, I mean, I don't know. I don't write anything about pets because we have a no pets rule in my house.
That's an awful rule.
It's a great rule. What are you talking about?
Why
is that an awful rule?
What about like a...
We're not having a cat. No. No.
Why would I allow a dead cat in any direction into my house?
Content.
That's my second question. My second question is about said felines. Okay. But let's answer the first one first.
But I mean, no, we have a legitimate... Just as a side note, we have a legitimate rule about no pets, largely because my wife is incredibly allergic to animals.
Oh, see, that's a fair reason. Yeah. If it's just a no pets because we don't like animals, I have questions about your character.
I'm not questioning your wife's also. Has she really tried, is allergic?
Has she tried essential oils?
Okay.
I feel like some
lavender or oregano oil would solve that problem.
You know,
just rub it on her feet.
You know, she had someone talk to her about that, and then they also asked her if she'd like some Tupperware containers and maybe some all natural cleaning supplies.
Usually there's some makeup business of some kind. Yeah, did they pull open a three-ring binder and offer her a wonderful opportunity? Man.
They sure did.
Yeah.
They sure did.
All right. Was your second question, I hope I'm Rooney, is about why do teachers force you?
Second question is, so we never answered the first one. Why do psychos write these?
Yeah.
Because I don't think any of us have an answer.
No.
We have no idea why people would want to write a book, aim it at children, that is, here, let me tell you a story about a heroic canine that saves the day, that saves a boy from wild pigs, that saves a boy from wild bulls, that saves a boy from wild wolves, and then it gets rabies, and then the boy shoots it in the head.
Right.
That's insanity.
So is there...
It's hazing.
Hazing
is why they get assigned.
I know.
Because teachers are like, oh, I had to read this garbage, so I'm going to make you read this garbage. Yeah.
So is it, to both questions, is it maybe because it's a misguided but well-meaning attempt to help prepare kids for the reality of life? That things die, that the world is kind of crappy.
Is the hackneyed thought process that like, oh, these kids are going to lose people they love, so we'll give them like the half measure and it'll be a dog.
Sure.
But it ends up being harder.
I know.
Right, because they like their dog more than grandma and grandpa.
There are a lot of kids who cry harder when their pet dies than when their grandpa dies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not like... It's not judgment about kids.
No.
Yeah. Or adults who do the same thing. That's just Dave. Like there's a different sort of attachment. Yeah, I see Dave raising his hand. I see that hand, Dave. So my second question is this. If there's like a whole genre of dog dies books.
Mm-hmm.
You got Old Yeller, you got Sounder, you got Where the Red Fern Grows, you've got John Wick. Oh no, wait, that was a movie. But the dog dies and then he lays waste to New York City. So here's my question. Why is there not a genre about cats dying? Is it because no one cares? Or B, because cats are the worst? Or C, because a publisher's like, why would I want to publish that crap? Or is it because cat people are insane? Or is it because their feelings are all screwed up so they can't even write this kind of book? Like, we're on like option F and nobody's voting, so I'm just going to keep going.
There is actually a parasite in cat feces that takes over your brain. But
do you eat a lot of cat feces?
I thankfully do not. So
This podcast sucks. This just sucks. I want out.
See, Dave, here's what I don't understand. I don't understand how you can express... an endearment and love for Winston that is as pure and real as anything, and then you're also a cat person.
Hold on, that is
a pure on character disparagement, listeners. If I call someone a cat person, that's low.
Received. You know, I'm gonna accept that right there. So, I've had terrible cats. Actually, the first cat
redundant.
I remember.
Redundant.
Our first cat growing up, I don't know, the first one I remember, its name was, my sister is a veterinarian, by the way.
Which is probably like your 14th cat because the first 13 ran away. Carry on.
My sister is a veterinarian. She was one of those people who from a very early age said, I want to be a veterinarian and actually did it, you know, like 10 years old. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, when she was in high school, she brought home an unwanted cat and—
Also redundant.
Its name was, which you'll love, you'll appreciate this name if you know the movie Steel Magnolias. Weezer. You remember Weezer, the character? She's Shirley MacLaine's character, and she's like the mean old lady in it, essentially. And she's been in a bad mood for 40 years. That's what she always says, which is funny. So that was Weezer. All right. No, I did not like cats in that time. All right. I will say this. Kudos to my wife. We've had some wonderful cats, and they're fun. I have one. I will show. All right. If you look at my Instagram feed, you'll see Sawyer. By the way, I have two boy cats. Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer, thank you. Thank you.
Good
this
job.
This is a book tri-cast.
I'm waiting for you to describe them. The way every cat person tries to describe a likable cat, and I'm about to shoot you down for it.
Sawyer,
just go for it.
Sawyer plays hockey. He'll play like you can throw stuff at him. He'll like stop it like a goalie. He's awesome.
I like throwing things at cats. This sounds fun.
You're an evil, evil man.
I was waiting.
Is that going to be the tweet, Aaron? He's like, yes. You're an evil, evil man.
What I was waiting for is for you to say, you'll love this cat. He's just like a dog. At which point I would say.
He actually is. He's a dog cat.
In which case I would say, get a dog. If you want a cat that's just like a dog, get a dog that's just like a dog and you actually win.
Hold on.
Anyway, where's the
going.
Where's
Keep
the genre? Going. Where's the Keep genre going. Of books about people who are heartbroken over their dying feline?
Yeah.
Well, I certainly have never seen one. I have now. To be fair, I have. This is getting real. I have seen people get actually heartbroken over losing their cat.
Well, sure.
Yeah, in the office.
In the office. Not just no. In real life.
Real life.
In real life. Yeah.
Like I need to take a personal day type thing.
No, I mean my when her cat died, my mom was sad.
Oh, okay.
So,
she needed a personal day.
Yeah. Well, no,
she kind of did.
She did.
Right.
That's okay.
I get it. That. Yeah. I'm just like.
But yeah, there's no genre about it. There is a different
sort of like emotional magnetism of dogs than there is of cats. Like cats are not the heroes of any story. Besides, like the Cat in the Hat, and actually
and
he wasn't
Garfield.
A hero. He was an unwanted intruder, kind of like most cats.
Fair.
Garfield was a hero?
Apparently.
No, he was a main character. Those are two different things. He was a fat,
was
mean,
he actually the villain?
Judgmental crank who was awful to all the nice people in that card. He was funny as all get out, but also not nice.
Oh, golly. Would Hobbes of Calvin and Hobbes count as a...
Yeah, like, are you going to throw all the cats out the door?
I mean, he is a stuffed animal, so he kind of gets a pass because of that.
Okay, here's the thing.
Really,
if we're thinking this hard, every cat you come up with from this point forward is the exception that proves the rule.
That's fair.
Because you can't name one who's like, oh, but what about this cat that is universally loved? None. Not one.
No.
Dave, I'm waiting.
I got nothing.
You're the cat apologist over here.
Yeah. No, I'm looking up the interaction in Meet the Parents. You remember when he's talking about cats and dogs? He's like, great.
Dave's already checked out of the show. And he's watching
one of the funniest scenes. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Like, Greg, how come you don't like cats? I don't not like cats. I just prefer dogs. I mean, you know, I'm just more like a dog kind of person, you know, and come home wagging their little tails, happy to see you kind of. Oh, so you need that assurance, don't you? It's like, you prefer an emotionally shallow animal. You see, Greg, when you yell at a dog, his tail goes between his legs to cover up his genitals. His ears will go down.
PG-11.
A dog is very easy to break, but cats, you know, make you work for their affection, you know. They don't sell out like dogs do.
Would you like me to extend this metaphor out to the rest of that movie? And how Robert De Niro's character is akin to Jinx the cat, and they're both fairly awful throughout the entire thing.
They are.
And it takes a breaking them at the end to turn them into decent characters. And by them, I mean Robert De Niro, because Jinx remains awful throughout.
So good.
So, yeah, the cats are awful. I don't know.
It's true.
You're right. I can't think of a sacrificial cat book or movie
I have a,
that's out there.
I have a ham-handed segue.
All right. Do it.
Do it.
Is Nicolas Cage a cat or a dog person?
Ooh.
Wow. He's probably like a ferret person.
I was going to say, he's like an aardvark.
he's like a weasel, but my emu is amazing.
Yeah. Can't you see him like holding it and like petting it like this? Like Dr. Evil or something like that?
Like in a turtleneck?
Yeah, exactly. a white turtleneck?
with fur. With fur and some drool.
Oh, no. Poor Nick. Poor Nick Cage.
He's sleeping himself to. He's gonna make him feel better. On his pile of money.
The Nick Cage mention went out to what was the guy's name?
All right, Judson Abernathy.
There we go.
Judson, thank you first of all for your 5-star review. But he texts me this later. He's like, "By the way, try to find us to slip in a Nick Cage mention into the next few episodes, or I might just have to bump this down to 4 stars." All right, well.
Mission accomplished, gentlemen.
Mission accomplished, man. You're in right here. So, yeah, Nick Cage.
Yeah.
All right, so let's throw this out.
Barnabas, is it fair to say that Nick Cage has ruined as many movies as cats have ruined lives?
No. Because cats have 9 lives, which means they're 9 times as likely to ruin somebody else's lives.
All right, so let me throw another one out there. So you know how there's that documentary of the Superman that never happened, right?
Superman Lives with Tim Burton and Nick Cage.
Yes, Nick Cage was going to be Superman.
True story.
Imagine that. There's this footage of him getting into the suit with his long hair, like the long hair from
Con Air.
It's so funny. I mean, if you could have seen Barnabas's genuine laugh just now.
I'm just picturing Nick Cage with the underwear on the outside and a mullet.
No, that's really it. That's it right there. Which
that's amazing.
Which Superman subsequently was ruined by other directors.
Only one, the Brandon Routh one.
Every version that involves Henry Cavill has been ruined. So I don't know who the directors are. In fact, one of those I think had like 6 directors, which is part of the reason it's terrible.
Here's the thing, Henry Cavill was not a bad Superman.
No,
he's great.
We were talking about directors ruining Superman.
So I felt like it needed to be defended.
Yeah, that's fair. No, okay. And Henry Cavill is also just dashingly handsome and has lats for days. So good for him.
We give him props.
I just got an incredibly hearty laugh, a wonderful like Friday afternoon release laugh about Nick Cage with the mullet and the underwear on the outside.
Yeah.
What other characters, thinking specifically of like book characters, like book adaptation movies, what other movies would Nick Cage spectacularly ruin if he replaced the lead character? So it has to be a good movie
that we all love.
Or a good book in general that was turned into a movie.
So imagine
surprisingly turned into a good movie.
Okay. So for example, this is like low hanging fruit. Nick Cage playing Atticus Finch.
When we talked briefly about this before, that's exactly what I thought. Like, how could you ruin something that's so endearing?
I thought you were
endearing.
Just about to get, like, religiously offended that I said that sentence out loud.
I thought, what would be the worst thing? And that's it right there.
Okay, so that's...
How can you kill one of the most beloved
and
characters?
Yeah, we don't need to say a lot about that because it's so obvious. Yeah. So, like, what else?
Yeah, what else? All right.
Nick Cage, here's one. Nick Cage as Severus Snape.
Can you?
It'd just be so bizarre. It would be a twist.
You'd be like, kids, we can't watch this.
Yeah.
This is inappropriate.
See, this begs it. Like, the characters we're talking about have to be like really popular movies too. Hans Gruber,
the least intimidating villain.
What with Nick Cage trying to do the accent as well? It'd be so awkward.
Let's go next level creepy. Replacing Will Ferrell and Elf.
I
feel like there would be lawsuits involved.
Oh my gosh.
Why is he near that boy?
Have you ever seen?
Why is he in the bathroom while she's showering? Gosh, what's happening? He has a mullet.
Did you ever see that mashup of Elf as a horror movie?
Yes.
Remember that? Yeah, which is really funny. It's like Karate Kid where Ralph Macchio is the bully in it whenever they try and do that.
You mean he wasn't?
Poor Ralph Macchio.
What about...
I was going to say Forrest Gump.
I mean, he practically is Forrest Gump in real life.
No.
Like, it's an inexplicably long career with random connections. So,
ouch.
And a weird accent.
The Bourne Identity?
See, he's done a variety of action movies.
Yeah, but that one specifically. So I mean,
see, the thing
whether
is
it
like,
was whether it was one that was more faithful to the book, or which Barnabas, I know you and I disagree with on its merits.
One of us is right, and the other one is you. Carry on.
I almost said Brokeback Mountain. By the way. Sorry. I mean, I guess sorry. That was an article before a short story.
50 I'm Shades sorry. Of Grey. Yeah.
PG 11, gentlemen.
These are just movies.
I said
that's all it is.
It was about a color palette. I don't know what you're talking about.
All right.
Let's see.
Content.
What
I know.
What else would be spectacularly amazing if he was in it?
All right. So. One of my all-time favorite movies would be spectacularly ruined if he were in it, which is also one of my all-time favorite books, High Fidelity.
Mm.
I think he could play one of the music store guys. Okay,
sure, absolutely. Sure. But I mean, if he were replacing, I mean, keep in mind this is him replacing the lead character.
What about him replacing Tom Hanks in any rom-com that he's ever been in? Ooh. So going back,
well, then,
to,
then it turns into like some sort of creepy thriller.
All right, so
every turn,
here's the thing: like, imagining him in any romantic scenario turns into a creepy thriller.
Right, but the funny thing about Nicolas Cage is that he did a lot of those movies, like early '90s, like It Could Happen to You and Family Man. All those, you know, like he did a bunch like during the '90s. He owned in terms of those types
terrifying.
Of movies. I know, but
so,
that's what he did.
What about what about Nick Cage in The Princess Bride?
He would be a great Count Rugen.
Yeah. Oh,
sure.
Absolutely.
He'd be fine there, but I mean, again,
like, what,
replacing
like Inigo?
No. Well, there's that, but replacing.
Yeah.
Oh,
I think he could be a convincing Prince Humperdinck too.
Yes.
By the way, have you guys read The Princess Bride?
Yes.
William Goldman's?
It's
first of all, it's very true to the movie. Like, the movie is very true to it. They're very consistent. But it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Goldman was a genius. May he rest in peace.
Yeah.
Let's see. What other books that are adaptations?
A Beautiful Mind.
I think that would actually work really well.
Yeah.
Because you just have to make it a little bit more like trippy.
Yep.
Because if you've seen Matchstick Men, he does like trippy, not quite in his head. Like that's probably his best role.
I'll tell you a role that he actually probably could do well in is like The Shining.
That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, like they playing himself.
Can you see
like
his
psychotic
face through there, like
yeah.
the Here's Johnny thing?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm scrolling through and I'm like, I wonder, like, nah.
Okay, so we're determining is that Nick Cage can turn anything that's warm and heartfelt into something creepy.
Yes.
Practically a horror film.
And if it's already psychedelic and creepy, he's probably well suited to do it.
Correct.
Let's see.
Ready Player One?
What would he play in that? That movie sucked. It's hard to imagine anybody doing it.
You
a
didn't
better
like that? I didn't watch the movie. I love the book. I appreciated the movie.
Okay.
I thought it was fun.
It was. Yeah, you're right. It was fun.
That's a hard one to execute. Well.
Okay.
I'm sorry. My reaction had more to do with the fact that it resembled the book in like almost no ways. It was because the book just has so much detail in it, and the movie just
and the detail's really fun.
Right, it really works in the book.
No, I know. I thought the same thing. I'm like, oh, I wish they put this or that in there, and they didn't. And but
did you guys practically go Lord of the Rings on that? Like the way that
Lord of the Rings
fans were super obsessed about what wasn't included?
No, because I don't remember details. I just remember the impression. I could break down the Lord of the Rings.
Sure.
Why wasn't Tom Bombadil in there?
Yeah.
Anyway. Now, if they were going to do an extended Lord of the Rings and make Nick Cage Tom Bombadil, I'm here for that.
That would be awesome.
A mini film about Tom Bombadil.
So the Amazon series?
They didn't film that at all, did they? Kind of like, you know, the ending they filmed, but they didn't release. No. Or you can see it. Can you see that ending part?
I don't know if you can.
Will they go back to
the show?
We're
getting dangerously close to becoming a movie podcast today, though.
Well, we're talking about adaptations.
These are adaptations.
Okay, so let's get back. Okay, so a recent one that didn't do all that well in the theaters, but you saw it, I think. I know you've read the book. First Man.
Yeah, I love the movie, love the book. I'm clearly a
Nick
minority.
Nick Cage replaces Ryan Gosling. How does it do?
Man. Ryan Gosling, I don't think he was the best person for the role.
Sure.
I think that's
true for almost every role he takes.
You know, they could have gotten an actual Armstrong.
Ryan Gosling is really good at smirking.
Imagine if they'd actually gotten an Armstrong to play Neil Armstrong.
There you go.
Is he related to you, by the way?
Distantly.
Yeah?
Like
Adam and Eve?
There's a raider who entered Scotland and was very prolific.
Prolific.
And prodigious.
I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah,
he had lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of kids.
Oh, well, so, you know, he was active. I mean, he had energy.
But there are kudos. But I mean, there's a thing. You can actually tell there are certain Armstrongs that you can see are related to me that I've never met. Like, there's a lady who lives in Nashville who's related to me. And
that's weird.
That's crazy. So do you.
Distantly. I know.
It's true.
I
know. I'm trying to think of some others that he would.
Black Klansman.
I was going to go with Black Panther, but I thought maybe that was inappropriate, so I didn't. Canadian friend over here is senseless. Good for him.
How about Flash Gordon?
It'd be so funny.
Flash Gordon. Can you imagine him doing that? What's his name? Harry. What's his name? Who plays him?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, yeah, but it's so.
I don't know. Is this with the Queen soundtrack?
Oh, it's so good, and you know it. Everyone, if you like that, then you like Labyrinth too. Oh man.
I want to see young Nick Cage play Travis from Old Yeller.
That's another perfect fit for him, too. American Psycho. Nicolas Cage playing himself.
I want to see Nick Cage playing Travis from Old Yeller, the boy who has to shoot the dog.
Ooh.
Just to bring this full circle.
As a younger Nick Cage? All right, there you go.
Young Nick Cage. Honestly, maybe he tried out for that role. That's what scarred him, and that's why he became the unique weirdo that he is today. I blame Old Yeller. Maybe he read Where the Red Fern Grows and he just was twisted ever since.
You know, that could be it. But
that's also going to happen to our kids. They're all going to be twisted like Nick Cage.
Well, not my kids, because my kids haven't read that book.
And Nick Cage, we know you're listening. You're welcome on the podcast anytime.
That's right. Defend yourself.
Clearly, I will be kicked out of this TriCast if that happens. But that's okay.
The problem is we can't kick Aaron out because he does all the work.
He does. No, it's always Barnabas or Dave. There's bitterness all the time on this end of the.
You guys could kick me off for an episode as long as someone else is recording.
Dave and I have a lot of conversations that could be a podcast, but we don't know how to hit record.
I know. Every now and then we're talking separately. Like, gosh, where's Aaron? Come on, Aaron. Let's do this.
Aaron, bring it.
I'm here, guys.
Quickly.
We need to summon him.
I'm just the tag along on my own podcast. Whatever. It's fine.
I love it.
All right.
Cool.
So what are we reading?
You want to go first?
No, you go first.
Oh, man.
Dave.
Since we talked to Ellie before, I need to go back what I was reading. I can't remember the last few. Oh, yeah. Baseball theme. Stan Musial's bio. Although there's been a bunch of them, but the George Vesey one. I can't remember how to say his name. It's an ESPN book, but I loved it. I mean, coming from St. Louis, I had never read any bio on Stan Musial, and I had a deep appreciation for him.
There you go.
Side note, I did lock Stan Musial's car keys in the trunk of his car one time. And
were you valeting or what?
Wow. I was working at a country club. And he was so nice about it.
Was this recently?
No, he died like 6 years ago.
Dave's summer job.
I know, yeah.
He takes times summer are tough. Off.
I mean, you've been in Christian publishing for a long time.
This is like 97 or 98.
So in high school.
Thank you. No, this was high school. It was like it was like 96. But he's like my dad's boyhood hero. Yeah. So I had to come home after work, tell my dad, "Oh, Dad, by the way, you know your hero. You know, I locked his keys in his trunk."
But it's cool, right?
No, the most awkward thing was this: he was playing golf with Jack Buck, the announcer, and Joe Buck,
Joe Buck tomorrow night.
Yeah,
thank you.
No,
Jack
but
Buck.
Jack walks up with him when I have to explain to him that an idiot locked his keys in his trunk. I was getting his shoes or something like that. And I was going too fast, which that's what Dave does. But, here's the deal. They were awesome about it. Jack drove them to his house. Content to both of you. They gave me a $20 tip and front row seats of the game that night.
You should lock more keys in more
trunks.
Can
you
do that now with your next author relationship?
I love you guys. That's it.
Do you what are you reading, Aaron?
It's a love hate.
Well, I'm actually about to start The Boys in the Boat by Daniel James Brown.
That's a good one. It's a very good one. I think you'll enjoy it.
I like it.
There you go. So,
you don't have any thoughts on it because you haven't started it.
I have not started it yet. I have. I just recently finished the latest in my trek through Frederick Backman's books. My grandmother asked me to tell you she's sorry.
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 It doesn't say sorry.
Sorry.
Was it good? I haven't read that one.
It was interesting. All of his books. Okay, here's the thing. All of his books are very different from one another.
Uh-huh.
And in a really good way. It's got some really great. It's got some really great quirky humor. It's kind of weird, but I think you'd like it.
I mean, just the way he writes characters in general, suspect I would be intrigued and enjoy most of
it. Totally.
But,
totally.
Okay. Cool.
Yep.
I just finished a book called Lethal White.
Not Lethal Weapon.
No.
Okay.
Another one that Nick Cage would have spectacularly ruined.
Yes.
Keep going. Lethal White is the fourth book in the Cormoran Strike series, which is by Robert Galbraith, which is a pseudonym for J.K. Rowling.
Ah, yes.
So J.K. Rowling's... She writes about a private detective who solves crimes all around London and England, and his name is Cormoran Strike. And I don't know why she uses a pseudonym, maybe just so that the one name can be very brand associated with Harry Potter.
Well, you know why. Within a few years after the last Harry Potter book, and clearly it's like
it was like
she wants to keep
year.
Writing. And they kept it secret until about 2 days before it came out, and they were trying to measure too. She was wondering how good a reviews am I going to get for this, but it got wonderful reviews.
But it had no
but
pre-sales.
It was like a debut novel for someone, so
but
they weren't expecting
that was,
pre-sales.
I thought that was a casual vacancy. Because her first I thought her first novel post Harry Potter
that
was
later.
Vacancy.
That was later, because that's under her name, though, right? Is
not
that under
Galbraith?
No,
not
they started.
Originally.
No, they started.
Whatever the first one was, that was it. So if that
Casual
was
Vacancy was the first one, I think. And one of the things that they started doing on reprints, if I remember correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't they start putting, you know, J.K. Rowling writing as, like, kind of how...
I think on that one they did.
Yeah.
On the Cormoran Strike ones, they all just say Robert Galbraith. Mm. So she is as good a storyteller as you remember her being. Now, I mean, obviously Harry Potter was sort of like the transcendent world-building formative thing. But, the thing that made everybody like that was... It wasn't the plot line specifically or anything like that. It wasn't, the mysteries. Yeah. In fact, when you get people like snotty critics talking about Harry Potter, they're like, the rules of this universe don't work. And you're like, oh, shut up.
Yeah.
But it's the characters and how well they get along and their backstories and all that. That's the same with this. Like the characters and how it all works is really fun and interesting. So all the Cormoran Strike books are great. I thought this one was maybe better than the previous one, but the thing is they all build. It's not like one-off stories. There are elements of the stories that feed into the next one.
Yep.
In terms of villains, some of them in terms of like relational dynamics. So it keeps you coming back and setting up a future podcast. She does not come out with these like once every 6 months, so that she can actually write a really good story instead of being like certain authors who will go unnamed right now, who write a book a year and are getting progressively worse as storytellers.
It's for another podcast.
That is. All right.
We can't wait.
But that's some good setup. All right. So, guys, thanks for listening. Guys, thanks for hanging out. And if you've been enjoying the show, do leave us a gushing, glowing, any other...
Raving.
Mm-hmm. Tricast like a champ.
That's right.
I don't know what that means.
Type 5-star review.
Yeah.
You can froth at the mouth if you would like.
It's not weird.
Froth at the fingertips.
It's not weird.
Yeah. You can make it as weird as you want it to be within reason.
You can be prolific like Aaron's ancestors.
That's right. No, maybe don't.
No, that's bad advice. Okay.
Yeah, there's also border raiding and because they were reavers.
Reavers?
Yeah. Reavers.
They stole sheep and cattle.
Wait, reavers are... Is that...
Is
that from... I think there's something called Reavers in the Maze Runner. That series.
Yeah, they're taking the word from someone else. All right. But let's keep, let's not talk about that now. Let's save that for a future episode.
Okay.
All right. So yeah, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you later. Bye.